It's time now for Mind Body Health with your host, Dr. Marvin Trotter.
So we have Mary Jane DeVore and Judy Conley in the studio with us, and they know everything you want to know about hearing. So we're going to have them introduce themselves to begin with here.
Hi, I'm Mary Jane DeVore. I'm a hearing healthcare professional. I work in the Audiology Associates Office in the Village of Mendocino. I'm so glad to be at KZYX. I've been a member since, I think, 1990. And it's wonderful to be in the studio. Thanks for having us.
Good morning. I'm Judy Conley, and I've been a licensed and certified audiologist for 34 years. And I work in Audiology Associates along with Mary Jane. Basically, I'm in the Santa Rosa office and occasionally in our offices in Mill Valley and Novato. And thank you for joining us today.
Well, we're going to talk about hearing. You know, it's something that you never think about when you're 20, listening to all those rock concerts or firing your guns. But as you get older, it becomes really important. It's quite an impairment physically and socially. So we're going to ask them how we should protect ourselves and tell us a little about hearing to begin with. How do we hear?
Okay, well, let's start talking about a little bit about the anatomy of the ear, and then we'll talk about the mechanics of hearing. So our ears are divided into three parts: the outer ear, the middle ear, and the inner ear. So sound waves are vibrations, and they come in through the outer ear. The outer ear collects sounds, and they direct them into the external auditory canal. And the sound waves hit the eardrum. The eardrum starts vibrating. When the eardrum vibrates, the three bones connected to them move. And the very last bone is called the stapes, and that moves through a window that leads to the inner ear. And the organ of hearing itself is called the cochlea, and that's made up of two different types of fluid, endolymph and perilymph, and all these little hair cells, cilia. So when the stapes moves in, it displaces the fluid. The fluid then begins like a wave motion, kind of tickles those hair cells, and that turns into an electrical impulse that goes up the nerve to the brain. So in a nutshell, that's how we hear.
Awfully complex, really, for such a small structure.
It is very complex, and a lot can go wrong along the route.
And like many other things in our bodies, as we age, these little parts in our ears also age, and some parts of our bodies don't work as well as we get older. So sometimes it's not anything that you necessarily did, but it's just that you were lucky enough to live past an age where your hearing doesn't work as well as it used to.
So we're going to tell you what to expect when you come in for a hearing test. But before we do that, let's talk about some common causes of hearing loss. And let's start from the outer ear and we'll work ourselves in. So, of course, everybody thinks when they can't hear, the first thing they say is, it's got to be wax. So, you know, wax is sometimes a cause of hearing loss, usually not, unless it's completely filling the outer ear. Then you can have what's called swimmer's ear. And people who do a lot of swimming, sometimes the pH factor of the outer ear changes and they get a little infection. It's called swimmer's ear. And a lot of people who swim in cold water often, surfers, scuba divers, they get these bony growths that grow in their outer ear. And it keeps growing and growing and growing until it completely fills the canal and the sound waves can't get past them. Then we reach the eardrum, and you can have a perforated eardrum. You could have a little tumor that grows over the eardrum called a cholesteatoma. You could have fluid in the middle ear. There are three bones of the middle ear, and something can happen to those bones that they can get dislodged from each other, or a bony growth can form over them so they're not going to be moving as they should be. Then we get to the inner ear. There are a whole host of problems that could occur, from noise damage that damages those little hair cells to... Yes, Mary Jane?
I kind of do an interpretive dance with those little hair cells. You can't see it on the radio, but just imagine palm trees on a tropical island. And for years, the wind's blowing and the trees are moving back and forth. And after a while, a big hurricane comes and the trees have been moving back and forth so often that they're getting kind of tired. At some point, those palm trees and those little hair cells, they lay down and they don't get back up. They don't regenerate, and that's where a lot of hearing loss comes from, in the inner ear.
Great.
Great analogy.
Also medications that we take through the years, including tobacco, can have an effect on those hair cells, high fevers, hereditary conditions. So there are a lot of things that can happen. And when those hair cells bend, like Mary Jane described for us, the result can be a hearing loss and or ringing in the ears, which is called tinnitus or tinnitus. So those are just some common causes of hearing loss.
It's as you go through those subjects, it's interesting how many people come in the ER saying, I can't hear, is their major complaint. And often, I don't know why, but some people make more cerumen or wax in their ears than others. But particularly elderly people often come in and they've used Q-tips and have packed the very bottom of their ear canal with the cerumen and can't hear at all.
Oh, absolutely. I've seen several accidents through the years with people using Q-tips where, you know, they think they're getting a lot and all of a sudden maybe they feel faint. And I've seen somebody puncture their eardrum right. because they fainted using a Q-tip. Another person actually answered the phone while they had a Q-tip in their ear. I had a mother come. She was cleaning her ears and her little child just hit her on the ear.
Q-tips are a no-no.
Yeah, they're a no-no. I think Johnson & Johnson has my name listed, blacklisted.
And actually, the ear canal is designed to grow new skin like the rest of our body. And it grows the skin outward in sort of a spiral motion. So it's really a self-cleaning mechanism. Again, like many parts of our body, it doesn't work as well sometimes as we age. So that could be sometimes why you get a little more cerumen. And cerumen is a mixture of wax and oil because we have the two different glands in our ear. And it's there to protect your ear, actually. But if it doesn't self-clean, that can be a problem. But really, just some warm water and washcloth with, your pinky in the washcloth and clean around the inside of your ear should be just fine.
I have a friend that looked like he needed to have a jackhammer remove the little stones in his ear canal from having surfed a lot as a younger man.
Oh, yeah,
right.
The first time I saw that, I was just amazed that you had these like boulders in your ear canal.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting.
So, you know, we do say that after the age of 50, people should come and have a hearing test.
It's a baseline. It's a good thing to know where you sit. That way, if you do have some problems in the subsequent years, you can go back and see how fast things have changed.
I had a hearing test when I was about 35 because my wife said that for sure I was having hearing loss. And it was very embarrassing when Joe Otto told me that actually I had better than average hearing.
Right. It was just her frequency that you weren't hearing.
Selective hearing.
Go ahead.
So sometimes people are a little bit fearful of what's going to happen when they come in for a hearing test. So we want to walk you through that a little bit. So a patient comes to us, whether they have a referral from their doctor or sometimes they don't need that.
Or their wife said you need to go in and have your hearing tested.
And the first thing we do, we make them fill out and we take a very extensive case history. Then we will examine their ears. We'll put them in the test booth and we'll give them various tones, and we want to find out the lowest level. They can hear different tones at different frequencies or pitch. Then we want to know what's comfortable for them, how well they do at a comfortable level with words, what is too loud for them. And then we will also do a middle ear test, and it's painless. You know, it's in.
And the middle of the test is to see how well the tympanic membrane moves back and forth.
Right. And through that test, we know if the eardrum's intact, whether there's any fluid in the middle ear, whether the three bones are working as they should. It tells us a lot.
It's interesting that a lot of little kids, everybody knows that when you have an ear infection as a small child, that's the middle ear, and often it's bacterial, but frequently it's viral. You take antibiotics that may or may not help. But a lot of people go around with allergies that have fluid in their middle ear, but it isn't an infection, and that's an excellent test to pick that up.
Right, right. It could also pick up if the eustachian tube, which is a tube leading from the back of the throat to the middle ear, is working properly. The job of that eustachian tube is to equalize air pressure.
Right. And like when you're in an airplane and you do that little swallow or try and chew gum to make that work, that's sometimes what doesn't work if the eustachian tube is blocked.
Lots of different reasons.
Yeah. So a lot of people will come in and they say, I'm sure there's something in my ear. I feel a lot of pressure. It's stuffy. I'm sure there's something going on in there. And it turns out they have a high frequency hearing loss and there's nothing going on in terms of infections or viruses, but that it gives it the sensation that they have.
Huh, I didn't know they had that sensation.
Yeah.
And as you get older, is the high frequencies that you lose first?
That's where typically.
Right. When you look at the cochlea, it's like a snail shell and it has rows of hairs. There are thousands and thousands of little hairs. Each little row detects a different frequency, a different little part of a frequency. So the ones at the outside detect the higher frequencies. And you think of those palm trees again, those are the ones that get the brunt of all of the waves that come in. Deep down inside the curl of the cochlea are the low frequencies. And those are protected but just by the physical space that they're in. So a very, very much more rare is a low frequency loss. What we often see is a high frequency loss.
Never knew how that worked. Fascinating.
It's a very complex system. It is. Those three little bones are the smallest bones in your body also.
So there's lots to be done to protect your hearing. And, you know, as we said, one of the most common causes of hearing loss is being exposed to loud noise. So if you play an instrument, we have what's called musician's earplugs, which are special earplugs with filters that can bring down the sound that you're exposed to, you know, 9 decibels, 15 decibels, 25 decibels.
Right, and they're made specifically for each individual person.
Right. We've got hunter's earplugs that as soon as the gun fires, you know, it'll attenuate and they won't be exposed to such loud noise. We have people that come in for sleep plugs if their spouse snores a lot.
A lot of women can relate to that. Sleep apnea is so common.
Unfortunately,
obesity. And I've never understood how the women deal with, you know, just freight trains that some men sound like at night from their sleep apnea. And if you listen to this, that's your husband or wife should get tested for sleep apnea if they stop breathing and snore really heavily at night, because it's another problem.
But even, you know, if they go to concerts, I always tell the story. It was 1976. I was in graduate school, and I went to a Who concert in Madison Square Garden. And I was just learning about noise-induced hearing loss. And the concert was so loud that I stood the entire time with my hands in my ears saying, oh, my God, I'm going to kill my hearing. And since that time, anytime I go to a concert, I bring earplugs, and I still hear very well, you know, the music. So people need to consider that. You know, we see lots of musicians that have hearing loss.
Yeah, you know how when you go to a concert and you walk outside and your ears are ringing?
Right.
And it usually goes away in a day or two. That's a temporary hearing loss. Sometimes it becomes permanent if you do it long enough and frequently enough.
So all those Grateful Dead people, they're in trouble.
Yeah, those deadheads. So, you know, even the teenagers today, we see more and more teens with hearing loss, and it's getting to be a real problem.
What about headphones? You see so many kids with these, you know.
Well, what I say is if you have some headphones on or earbuds in and I can hear your music, it's too loud for you.
Yeah, that's a problem. Yeah. Well, those earbuds especially are a problem because they don't shut out the ambient noise. So what people tend to do is crank up their iPods or their MP3 players to block out that ambient noise. Not healthy. So they need to wear headphones that will block out the noise and then crank down their iPod to 1/4 of the way up.
So is there a particular earbud or something that does that? Is there a particular brand?
Just anything that's going to be noise canceling for the outside. You know, I don't have any particular brand.
Okay.
It's not as cool to walk around with headphones on as earbuds.
Right. But there are earbuds that are better than others?
I don't have any particular brands that
are better. So that's the key. If somebody can hear your music, it's probably too loud for you.
And there's also a trade-off. What's safe for the average person is 85 decibels for 8 hours. You go up 3 decibels, cut it out to 4 hours. So every time you go up 3 decibels, cut it in half again. So I recently went to a school dance. My husband's a teacher, and we went to a school dance, and I brought a sound level meter. And in the middle of the gymnasium, it was 106 decibels, which means those kids were safe for less than 1 minute.
Wow.
Yeah.
And think about just things we do frequently, or I try not to, but vacuum cleaning, mowing the lawn. You need to wear ear protection when you do these things.
Even your blender or food processor can be very, very loud.
Huh. And you say that the 85 decibels for 8 hours, is that after that you start damaging the hair cells?
Right.
So that's
exactly
what you're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And there's definitely, once you have that hearing loss, there's definitely an emotional impact, not only on the patient, but their family.
Yeah. You know, when people lose some of their hearing, it typically takes someone 5 to 7 years from when they start noticing a hearing loss to when they decide they want to do something about it. And in that intervening time, they could have more hearing loss. And also, it doesn't just affect them, because communication is always more than just one person. I've been known to talk to myself, and I find myself very entertaining, but it's other people that I'm speaking to and listening to that I really want to get their information. So it makes people feel isolated when they miss the end of a joke, or they're trying to catch up. They hear only parts of a sentence. There's a sound void in there where they're missing consonants more frequently. So they hear pool, but they don't know whether someone's calling you a fool or telling you to jump in the pool, because they're missing it. And then that sentence, they're trying to concentrate on that, and the next sentence is already stated. And so they fall behind. They miss things, important things in meetings. They can't hear what their grandchildren are saying. We had a patient come in, and she said she finally, and she was young, she'd always known she'd had a hearing loss, but she kind of let it go. But her teenage son said something to her. She said, "What?" He said it again. She said, "Repeat that." And he said, "Oh, forget about it." And she realized that he was going to be leaving home in a couple of years, and she needed to hear what he had to say. So that emotional impact, it makes you feel isolated, makes you feel alone, and it often makes people feel like they're stupid.
Helen Keller once said that if she had a choice about getting back her vision or her hearing, she would choose hearing, because vision keeps you from things, but hearing keeps you from people.
Really?
Fascinating. And really, it's a matter of prevention, but then early treatment is the other issue.
Yeah. So the earlier somebody gets treatment, whether it's medical treatment or by us, it would be more, technology, the better off they'll be. The earlier you treat hearing loss, the earlier you get amplification, the better you will hear. Because there are actually changes that occur in the brain, and we know this through imaging studies. Hmm. And it's called auditory deprivation. You don't use it, you lose it. So we want to get them in hearing aids as soon as possible. And there's so many different styles of hearing aids these days. They really run the gamut from, behind the ear instruments to very, very tiny ones that just go in the ear that practically disappear. Nobody can see. All different styles, all different circuitry levels.
And what we do when we have someone come to our practice, we try to look at the whole person. We just don't say, okay, the test shows you have a hearing loss, these hearing aids will work for you, see you later. We spend a lot of time talking to our community members and finding out when they come into us what kind of life they're leading. We don't want to provide someone with hearing instruments with lots of bells and whistles if they are very quiet. They maybe go to church or religious service once a month or so. They don't have a lot of family living nearby. They don't have dinners. They don't go to restaurants. They don't go to meetings. They don't need all of that extra ammunition. What we want to find out is, what is your life like? Are you very active? And then there's, what do you want your life to be like? Because like I said, with the emotional impact, some people remove themselves from life and a busy life because they can't hear and they're embarrassed about it. So if you're living a very quiet lifestyle, but you'd like to live a more active lifestyle, that's something we try and draw out from our patients as well, to find out really what their needs are emotionally as well as hearing.
And these days, the hearing devices are very, very automatic. You can just put it in your ear and forget about it, and they'll self-adjust according to the environment.
Well, really, I remember the years where everybody would play with the dial in their ear.
And yeah, it's you know, they still have them, and you know, we can give that to patients. But basically, the microphones, the computer chip actually in the hearing aids knows the difference between speech and noise because the spectrums look different.
Wow.
So when it perceives you're in a quiet environment or there's just conversation, the hearing aid will allow you to have surround sound. When you walk into a noisy environment like a restaurant, a bar, the back microphone will automatically shut off. Yet, we can give patients manual overrides so they have some controls.
I have a friend that has a hearing aid, and it's really, you know, it's something that you don't realize how important it is until you have problems. He has difficulty talking on the phone, et cetera, and as you say, in a bar or a loud room, he really has difficulty distinguishing. I think he has the same hearing aid he did 10 years ago.
Well, that could be the first problem.
But it is something like people smoke and smoke and smoke. And then all of a sudden they can't walk across the house to get to the bathroom. And you realize that you've smoked 90% of your lungs away. And then you go, oh, I have a problem. This sounds very much
right.
Like hearing.
Right. And we also need our patients to understand that we can't replace what they have lost. We can augment what they have left. And also teach them communication skills, and so that they can teach their family and friends communication skills. Because if you have a walker or a cane or a wheelchair, everyone can see that you have mobility problems, but nobody can see your hearing loss. They think you're not listening, you're not paying attention, you're not interested. They don't see, even when you're wearing an technology, a hearing instruments, most people don't notice details. They're involved in their own lives, as we all are, and you might have to remind them repeatedly, I have a hearing loss. This is what you can do to help me hear. I really want to hear what you're saying.
Does it help a lot for people to look you in the face and that sort of thing?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But as Mary Jane was saying, and a thought came to me that hearing loss is really very gradual. So, you know, it's every decade, a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more, and you're getting used to it.
That's right.
So your hearing loss becomes your new normal. That's what you mm-hmm. think you're supposed
just
to hear.
Just like you're limiting your activities with emphysema.
So you're not noticing what you're not hearing. So oftentimes we'll aid a patient and they'll say, wow, I forgot what this sounds like. I forgot what the birds sound like. So that can be very touching. And also there's a there's some connection between dementia and hearing loss.
Oh, fascinating.
We know that patients who have dementia, if they have a hearing loss and it's untreated, it could possibly speed up.
Well, it's like exercising your brain. You know, when you stop hearing certain sounds, those parts of your brain that were hearing it, they kind of sit in a recliner and put their feet up. They start to take a little nap. And after a while, they're in a deep snooze and you can't wake them up.
It's interesting when you said that your brain actually has auditory deprivation is what you're talking about, where you just turn off because you can't hear the birds or the specific noises and you get used to the silence, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. And it's a danger as well. You know, if you don't hear your door, someone at your door, if you don't hear someone has come into your home, you might not hear an alarm. You don't hear the beeper when it tells you your cookies are done in the oven. It's dangerous.
You might starve.
So it's a gradual process to rebuild that back up. If they haven't been hearing the birds for 30 years, you know, when we put a hearing aid on them, we don't want to give them too much amplification at one time. It's a shock to their system. They're not used to it. So in our office, we do a gradual process, little by little.
That's right. You take those brain cells that are having a deep snooze and you kind of shake them a little, open the blinds, ask if they'd like a little cup of tea. You don't just want to pull the blanket off and shove them out the door.
Because they're relearning the sounds they want to hear, and they also have to relearn how to filter out sounds they don't want to hear. like traffic.
So how exactly do the hearing aids work? It's always, it's just a matter of, you know, amplification, or how do they work?
Well, they're all digital today, and we can fine tune it. We have different levels of hearing aids. Some of them we can just do bass and treble, and the more sophisticated ones have many channels that we can go in frequency by frequency and shape it to their hearing loss.
Just like the soundboard in front of us.
So we can have two people with the same hearing loss, give them the same hearing aid, but we're going to program it differently per each individual.
So you can go just for the high frequency loss.
Absolutely.
Or you can increase where that blocks out the ambient noise.
But everybody's perception is different as well. So what we do in our office is something called real ear testing, where we put a little probe mic in their ear. We get a reading of the resonance of the ear canal without the hearing aid. Then we put the hearing aid in and we see exactly what they're getting. But two people may have different perceptions, and to one person it may sound wonderful, to somebody else not so good. So of course their input, the patient's input, is very important.
So technology really has come a long way in the last 10 or 15 years, I would think.
Yeah.
Well, it's just like computers. You know, you have a computer that's 5 years old and you're just kind of limping along.
Huh. Fascinating. We're talking with Mary Jane DeVore and Judy Conley about hearing, and in a couple of minutes we're going to start taking your calls at 9:30.
So I think the message that I want to give out is that people shouldn't be afraid. That, you know, if they feel, you know, they're 50 or even younger and they feel they may have some hearing loss, come in for a test. You know, there's no obligation on anyone's part. Just find out. Talk to us.
Better late than never, sort of thing. And you went to too many Grateful Dead concerts. Have you ever tested yourself?
You know, people shouldn't just think it's rock music. You know, you go to the symphony and it's loud enough, or you're really in a band and you've got the brass section behind you. You know, that can put you in trouble as
and
well.
And are there genetically susceptible people? I mean, I know there are lots of, you know, why does one person go to the rock concert and get deaf and the other one doesn't?
Well, I think you kind of just answered that. There is a genetic susceptibility that one person, you know, is more susceptible than somebody else.
And does that run in families?
It can.
And then, of course, there are the people that like to stand right under the speakers. You know, they want to hear the bass in their body going ba-boom, ba-boom, ba-boom. Well, you're going to pay for that.
There's also a synergistic effect. You know, is one person taking medication? You know, is one person also going to the firing range the next day? You know, did one person have fevers when they were younger? So there's a lot. It's not just going to the rock concert, but what else are you doing?
Yeah, it's complicated. Oftentimes it's a combination of bad choices, bad luck, bad genetics. But there can be any degree of combinations of those things.
I think the important thing that you said is that they're really three or four different mechanisms going on here that allow you to hear well. And I see a lot of people that come in the emergency department with almost opaque and TMs, eardrums, from their infections as children. And then also people with allergies or too much cerumen, or it's a multifaceted sort of thing as to whether or not, you know, why you don't hear well.
Right. And also if someone has only ringing in the ear, that's their only symptom, they should come for a hearing test, because we know that 62% of people with ringing in their ear have hearing loss.
And that's a very common, and there's a lot of disease processes that give you tinnitus or ringing in the ears. You want to announce the phone numbers?
Yes. We're ready to take calls now at 895-2448, and hear what you have to say to contribute to this morning's conversation.
One of the things that I wanted to point out is that when someone comes to us, they have a hearing test, say they have a hearing problem, we can see that they have a loss, and not everybody is a candidate for hearing instruments. We don't want to give someone instruments that are not useful to them. But when someone does need hearing instruments and they decide to go ahead with that, We adapt the hearing instruments as the person adapts to them. So it's a process. It's not just, you know, here you go and send them out the door. Okay. We see people repeatedly because there is an adaptation process. You need to get used to new sound, sound of your own voice, etc.
Okay, we have a call.
Caller, you're on the air.
You have a question? Go ahead.
Hey, all right. I'm a candidate for one of those hearing instruments, but I don't know whom to call or where to go. Could you please give these ladies
information,
you know, name of their agency or business or whatever?
Sure. Mary Jane's in Mendocino.
We work for a business called Audiology Associates. Our main office is in Santa Rosa. We have satellite offices in the Village of Mendocino, in Novato, and in Mill Valley.
Let me give you a phone number of our main office in case anybody listening would like to come in. The number is 707-523-4740. And you can also visit us at our website, which is www.audiologyassociates-sr.com.
And you can have an appointment at any of the offices by calling that main office.
What is the most common, I know we've talked about this before the show, that you don't have a more common patient, but I would presume that the majority of your patients are 50 or 60 or...
We do see a lot of the older population in our communities. We see people in their 90s.
Oh, really?
Yes. And they're
so it's a progressive disease throughout,
Well, some of them are coming in for the first time, but it's...
What's the natural history? You know, if you didn't ruin your ears at a rock concert, what's the natural history of your hearing?
Well, we always say at 50, at least have a baseline. And we are seeing more and more baby boomers, younger and younger people all the time, because we are a noisy society. It's not just, as I said, it's not just the rock concerts.
You're not a little farm on the prairie these days.
No, we're not.
No.
So, we see a lot of middle-aged people as well. And we're seeing younger and younger people all the time. As I said, you know, teen hearing loss is on the increase.
So how would you, here you're a 15-year-old or 20-year-old. Hearing loss doesn't really come to mind, so to speak.
No.
And how do you, what would be your first tip-off? I mean, do people say to somebody, you're not hearing me as well as your sister? Or how do you pick up the early ones?
Well, sometimes in school.
That's right.
They have hearing screenings in school. And sometimes academically, they'll start to suffer. Whereas maybe you were an A student, now all of a sudden you're a C student. Maybe you're not doing paying attention, or it seems like you're not paying attention.
Yeah, how would you know that? That's the thing. I mean, do most people tip you off, or do you self-diagnose that you have a problem?
Well, it's hard to know, particularly with children, whether they're just uninterested in the subject, their schooling is boring to them, which is frequently the case, or they're actually having a hearing loss. I don't think they do screenings in schools as much as they used to. Do we have a call?
Yes.
You're on the air, caller.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a couple questions. First, my issue is when I was a child, I had a lot of chronic ear infections.
Okay.
That apparently were just treated with cotton balls and hot oil, olive oil.
Okay.
And so I have hearing loss in one of my ears, and I'm just wondering, is that going to progressively, deteriorate as I age?
We don't know.
No.
And that's the best I can say.
Oh, good. It isn't an obvious problem.
Yeah.
Not necessarily.
And the best thing to do is come in for a baseline, and then, we can monitor it every year or so.
Okay.
How are you doing when you're in a noisy situation? Are you finding it difficult in a restaurant?
No, but everybody says that I don't talk loud enough. And so...
That's interesting.
That I'm talking too soft, but the only thing that I don't do is use the phone on that ear because I don't hear very well. I have earpiece for, driving in the car or something in that ear, because I just don't hear well. So,
unilateral hearing loss you know, has its own unique problems.
Uh-huh.
You know, people do very well in quiet situations, but oftentimes when they're in a noisy situation, as I said, like a restaurant, they're going to have a difficult time squelching out that background noise.
And it's also hard to locate, see where sound is coming from when you have hearing loss on one side rather than both.
I see, yeah.
And that's a safety issue. You're walking down the street and someone honks the horn because you're going to be run over and you don't know which side it's coming from.
Oh, okay.
I think it's fascinating, or good news, is that one, it may not deteriorate any quicker. It may be a stable situation. The other thing was, don't most people complain that you're talking too loudly rather than too softly? Is that a common presentation?
With hearing loss, it can go either way.
Either way?
Yeah.
Fascinating. I would never have thought that talking too softly.
You know, it depends sometimes if they have what's called a conductive hearing loss, an inner, which is a middle ear or outer ear loss, or a sensory neural loss, which is an inner ear loss.
And you all mostly deal with the sensory neural loss.
We deal with both.
We deal with both. You know, we do diagnostic as well as helping someone with their problems. First, we try and find out what the problem is. We work closely with all of our area's physicians because sometimes we get referrals from physicians, and sometimes we need to refer back to the physician.
Okay, we have some more calls.
You're on the air. Caller?
Hello?
Yes. Go ahead.
Could you talk about the causes, the treatments, and the effects of acoustic neuroma?
Okay, we'll try. We're going to take your call off the air because there's some background noise.
Thank you.
Okay, so acoustic neuroma is a tumor that lies on the nerve of the inner ear. There are various treatments from surgery to radiation. Often it affects your balance center as well. You might have ringing in the ear. Your understanding of speech in that ear may be very poor. And you know, the best person to really discuss the right treatment for you is your ear surgeon.
Yes, it's quite a surgery, and it's fortunately a rare disease. I'm sorry, I'm not learned enough to discuss it further with you. We have some more calls.
Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Deborah calling back. I had one more question. This pertains to my daughter. 1 year ago, she was assaulted and with a head injury, and she was hit in the head, and her eardrum was ruptured. And to this day, she still doesn't have hearing in that ear. However, the doctor said that there was no nerve damage.
She needs to be tested.
Is there anything that can happen for her?
You would think if it's just a perforated eardrum, most people heal from that. So I would argue that you need to be tested because your eardrum should have, you know, maybe there's some scarring of your eardrum, but that sounds a little suspicious to me.
Well, she did have, for about 3 months, she was, having doctor visits with the ENT and also the Hearing Institute over in Hawaii is where she lives. And, the doctor just said long-term, if it didn't heal, maybe surgery.
Yeah, you can repair them surgically, but that seems like she got appropriate treatment. But
I'm wondering,
she really didn't do anything except like ear drops. I mean, she had a lot of pain. She still has trouble. She cannot, she has trouble with any loud music.
Okay.
Or she cannot use. She has to use an earplug if she's swimming or.
Okay, so
hearing earphones or anything like that she can't use.
Okay, well, I have a few things to say. Number one, she had a head injury. She had a perforated eardrum. I'm wondering about the integrity of the three bones that are connected to the eardrum, if they've been affected at all.
Well, I was with her with a few of the visits, and, to tell you the truth, I just cannot remember what the doctor said.
Right. So at this point, we're just guessing. Without seeing any results, we're just guessing.
Sounds like she needs to be tested again. We have another call. Thank you for calling back.
You're on the air. Caller?
Hello. Thanks for the show. It's great information. I appreciate it.
Good.
And just on a personal note, you mentioned like going into a bar or a restaurant. Like my situation, if I go into a crowded place to meet people or to have a party, I can't hear anybody. So I definitely tune out, and I'm very quiet. And then when I get out of the loud environment, then I engage with people once again. So it's kind of like I hear all the conversations, but I can't hear the conversation clearly of the person right in front of me.
You know, that's interesting because that's a cognitive function also. If you have normal hearing, when you're 20 and you've got five people talking to you, you can hear all five of them. When you're 60 and five people are talking to you, you don't get anything.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, oh, is so that right? It's more function. Of a cognitive. Mm-hmm. Your brain can't distinguish the conversations as well.
After the age of 25, our cognition slows down.
25, I'm in trouble.
First at 25, they tell me exactly I need a Rilla Volet. Now they're telling me that my cognition slows up. But
fascinating.
And also, people tend to talk faster than our brains can process.
Yeah.
And that's when we talk about communication skills, we all need this. It's a good idea to tell people that we would like to hear what they have to say, and the best things that they can do is to get our attention first and speak a little more slowly, just a little bit. They don't need to speak louder usually, just a little more slowly so we can process what they're saying.
Great question. Thank you very much. We have another call.
Caller, you're on the air. Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
KCYX, right?
That's right.
My 9-year-old grandson has a cochlear implant, and he loves his video games. And I'm wondering if smart meters and electromagnetic energy and video games have any effect on cochlear implants.
Not that I'm aware of.
Oh, well, that's good news.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Fascinating. It is. I've never understood how the hell they do surgery on those tiny bones in your ear. I mean, they're just, you know, really small.
Yeah, well, the cochlear implant is actually inserted, you know, in the
cochlea. That's the cochlear.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
And
very carefully.
How do you replicate the, you know, snail? What is the mechanics for that? That's interesting.
Well, that's a whole nother specialty. But I know that there's an electrode array that goes into the cochlea and stimulates those hair cells.
So you're not removing what's there.
No.
You're stimulating or amplifying what the cochlea receives.
And the deaf community is of mixed opinions about these things. Many people in the deaf community feel that cochlear implants are not useful and they don't see themselves as impaired. They find themselves to be perfect the way they are, and I have to agree, if they decide that that's the way they want to live, I don't see any reason why they should be forced to have those. In children, it's a tricky story, you know? I mean, whether a parent allows that or not. Judy?
On a personal level, to help other parents out there that may have a hearing-impaired child, my niece, who is now 23, is severe to profoundly hearing-impaired. And we discovered it at age 6 months. She got her hearing aids before the age of one. She had a 4.0 index all through college. She has a 4.0 index in graduate school. She plays the viola, and she's just smart as a whip and has done everything she ever wanted to do.
Yeah, I would think that diagnosing that very early is the key. Okay, we have two more calls.
You're on the air, caller.
Hello. Thanks for all the information. Wonderful. I'm fascinated. I'm 55 and
a youngster.
Are you aware of any free or low cost hearing tests, basic hearing tests available in our community at any time? I know that there's been some for other, like bone density and things like that. Do they also ever have anything? I'm on a extremely limited budget.
Yeah. Well, what community are you living in?
Ukiah, I'm sorry.
You can check our website. It's www.audiologyassociates-santarosa.com. We often have programs where we do free screenings. So the closest for you would be Santa Rosa.
Okay.
Judy?
That being said, you can also call our office, tell them you heard us on the radio, and we'll be happy to give you a free screening.
And that would give you a baseline, just the beginning.
Right. That's sounds, all I wanted to. Yeah.
Sounds pretty low cost.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye.
You're on the air, caller.
Hello. I am 58, and I have hearing loss. I know because, well, I know it. For a variety of reasons. I've ridden motorcycles many years and often without earplugs. One thing I'm noticing is that I am really sensitive to low sound, like diesel engines running or Harleys. I mean, I don't ride a Harley, but, you know, that I'm very sensitive, and it's really annoying. We have just moved into Ukiah from the country. Oh, it's been about a year, so of course it's a lot noisier in where we live. I guess my question is, with a hearing aid, would I be less annoyed?
Well, that's a great question.
Yeah.
Because sensitivity to loud sounds or noise is a symptom of an inner ear hearing loss.
I'm really sorry. I'm having trouble hearing you. Maybe I should just
take the answer off the air. Right.
So, as I was saying, sensitivity to loud sounds is a symptom of an inner ear hearing loss. So when you do come for a hearing test, that's one of the things we check for. We want to know what's uncomfortable for you. So when you do get hearing devices, we're going to set it so that it's not too loud for you, not annoying to you.
But that's kind of a different, you're almost hearing some sounds too well. Or individual sensitivity.
It's interesting. As you lose your hearing, oftentimes the noise of a loud sound becomes more sensitive to it. So let's say you don't hear speech comfortably or reliably until about 60 decibels. It might be that when you were younger, you could hear a 100 decibel sound and not be irritated by it. But now when you hear a 80 decibel sound, it's just too much, something you don't want to listen to for more than 5 seconds. So that means you have between 60 decibels and 80 decibels is where you're going to be comfortable hearing. That's called a dynamic range, and that's where we have to do all of the programming in that 20 decibels. Sometimes it's quite a small window.
It's just that the fact is you lose the high sounds, that you become more sensitive to the low sounds, or what's the mechanics to his complaint?
I don't think... When we talk about high and low, we talk about low pitch and high pitch.
Okay.
He's talking about the intensity, how loud it is.
And that's more of an individual.
And that's a symptom of an inner ear hearing
okay.
loss.
All right. Fascinating. We have another call. Oops. We missed.
Call back again if you have a chance.
So tell me that again, that so you're setting, you can actually dampen certain sounds with your hearing aid.
Right, so we can set it so that it's not too much for you. So that if you walk down the street and somebody has a jackhammer, you know, you're not going to want to pull out your hearing aids.
So you can dampen those 80, 100 decibel problems and not interrupt your ability to understand speech. Okay, we're going to try again.
You're on the air, caller.
Hi, yes. Couple things. Judy, I'm having a little difficulty hearing you. The other two sound fine. It sounds like either you're too far from the mic or your mic isn't on. And it's a technical thing, not a cognizance okay. or a decibel.
Okay, she's more clear resonance. Than we are.
And I wanted to mention to the previous caller, it may not be hearing per se so much as it is being in a city going from a quieter country area. And the technique that I've used is finding a radio station that maybe plays soft, gentle music that you can have as a dampener so you don't get like sudden sirens or Harley going by, emphasized by just going back to silence. And when I used to be in the Air Force, it worked because people would come in at all times of the night in the barracks. So I had a radio on, and I understand that there's like sound generators of ocean sounds and other soothing sounds that maybe running water sounds, things like this, that will dampen out the highs, sharp highs, with the impacted by that silence that comes right after it, which can be really very disturbing, especially during sleep time. Well, that, I just wanted to put that out as a suggestion for that person.
Thank you for bringing that up, because that's something we use for our tinnitus patients, people who have ringing in the ear. You know, we want to keep those hair cells busy so they're not noticing the ringing in their ear. And sometimes we'll use these noise generators. Sometimes we'll use hearing aids, you know, depending on the situation.
I remember one of the older docs in the ER got a little box that made a wave like you were at the ocean to put in the sleep room because of the noise. But are you actually, is your brain getting desensitized, or what does the background noise do?
Well, what happens with tinnitus is your brain is saying, I'm not hearing well, and it's sending down a signal. So we know by keeping those hair cells busy that people don't perceive the tinnitus as much. Most people say it's worse when they're in silence, when they're trying to go to sleep. So when they're trying to go to sleep, we'll say, you know, have a fan on, have maybe some light music, or those wave machines. But during the day, oftentimes a hearing aid, just give them a little bit of amplification, and they're not perceiving the ringing as much.
So they hear they hear other sounds better, and so their brain isn't perceiving the tinnitus. Okay. So what's fascinating to me about this is that I thought it was more of a very simple explanation to most of this. You know, I'm an ER doc, and the three things to be an ER doc is stop the bleeding, oxygen is good, and make the blood go round and round.
You know? I love that.
And I always thought that the hearing loss thing was always just an aging process with your losing the higher frequencies. But there's 67 different reasons why people lose their hearing.
Well, and also some people just need a little amplification or a lot of amplification. But for other people, it's a clarity issue. So they're hearing, and they say, I hear fine. I'm just not understanding what I'm hearing.
And is that a cognitive thing?
That's a typical high-frequency hearing loss. If they're normal in the low and the mid-range, oftentimes they don't have problems with volume. They know people are talking to them because our vowel sounds are low frequencies. Our high frequencies are where the consonants are, and that gives us clarity.
Fascinating. So you can hear, you know, someone's talking to you, hear it, but it's your brain can't pick up the high frequency enough to distinguish things.
So you're missing parts.
Okay.
Well. You're on the air, caller.
Hi. What is done for the person who has a hearing loss from surfing? Is there a test, or does it have to be surgery, or how does that go?
Good question.
I'll listen on the radio. Thank you.
So with surfing, oftentimes there's a bony growths in the ear canal. And depending on the severity of that, you know, they may require surgery or not. And that's up to them and their physician.
I had a friend that just went through this, and he surfed a lot down in San Diego, was in the water a lot, and literally had to jackhammer out these boulders in their ear canal, but it made a huge difference.
Oh, sure.
So for people who are surfing who want to use some prevention, you can get swim plugs. they're custom-made for your ears, and you can keep that cold water out. Think of it as a wetsuit for your ears.
Again, prevention. Mm-hmm. So you ride a Harley, you work outside on the streets a lot. You should get some plugs.
We have motorcycle plugs as well that fit under the helmets.
You can walk into a drugstore and get.
You can't, because we custom make them to the shape of.
No, but I'm just saying that there are some over-the-counter products.
Yes, definitely. And for some people, those work very well. None of them work as well as ones that are made specifically for your ears.
And is there a type or foam better than wax? Or, you know, I know there's different.
Everyone is individual. So one person will find one that works better than another.
And your plugs are made out of?
It's a silicone material. We take an ear impression. First, we put a little foam block in your ear or a cotton block in your ear so that the impression material doesn't go up against your eardrum. Mm-hmm. And then we, of course, we first inspect the ear before we do this and find out that you have an intact eardrum and ear canal. And then we insert the impression material into your ear. It takes about 5 to 6 minutes to dry. When it comes out, you've got a wonderful little negative ear canal. It's bright pink usually. And it's fascinating to see. Everyone's eardrum is different. And then we send those off to the manufacturer and tell them exactly what kind of plugs we want.
And you get a form-fitting silicone implant.
Yes. And
above the neck.
Right. And it can be multiple colors. It can be rainbow swirls. They can be attached to cords. My husband has a pair that he uses when he's using power tools. My son has a pair that he uses in the engine room of ships. And he needs to be able to hear people as well as lower the sound in the engine room.
So you can actually distinguish those two things with plugs. Yes.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, fascinating. I think we can take one more call.
Paula, you're on the air.
Hi. I appreciate the information. We're dealing with this very same stuff. And I just wanted to answer a caller before. They were asking if there was any low-cost hearing tests, and there is at Mendo Lake Audiology, and that's at 756 South Dora. It's 463-2966. They're $25 as opposed to $180, and we just figured that one out, so I thought I'd share it with other people. And you guys are doing a great job.
Yeah, and as I mentioned,
thanks.
As I mentioned, we'll do free screenings if necessary. Just call our office. Again, our number is 707-523-4740. Say you heard us on the radio. We'll be glad to see you.
And I really want people to understand that everyone is an individual. How much is your hearing worth to you? And what is it that you want to hear?
Yeah, we drink Perrier, right?
That's right.
Thank you very much, Mary Jane DeVore and Judy Connolly. This was a very interesting show, and I think we're done.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.